welcome everybody here to the Lakers Lowdown Podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin, Lakers insider for Lakers Daily. Today on the show, Dan Hurley decided to stay at UConn, leaving the Lakers in a really tough spot. We have to talk about what happened there, the offer, the decision, and now the indecision that the Lakers are dealing with as they embark on what feels like a brand new search for a head coach. Let's talk about it. So the big news, obviously, we were told that Dan Hurley was going to make his decision on Monday. I wore this here tinfoil hat last time you guys heard from me. And while I was wearing it, thought that maybe I took him going back to UConn to mean that he was probably going to go there and have his Leonardo DiCaprio, I'm not fucking leaving moving moment, wound up being correct. I'll say this. Overnight and into the morning, I had spoken to a few people, like a handful of people, and nobody thought he was going to the Lakers. Most people thought the situation was pointing in the direction where he was probably going to stay at UConn, but nobody was saying it definitively enough that we could operate off of it. Just about everybody was in the dark. And actually, as of this morning, when I checked in on it, the Lakers were also in the dark. They thought that they had made a compelling offer. They thought that they had, you know, they felt confident about the meetings that they had with Dan Hurley over the weekend. And apparently, as you know, as of this morning, we're waiting just like the rest of us for what Dan's final decision was going to be. I would imagine they found out a little bit before us, and you know, as kind of a as a gesture of goodwill from Dan to the Lakers, he probably told them before he, or around the time that he told his team, and certainly I think before it became public information that he was going to be staying at UConn. But I was told as of this morning, you know, this being, was today Monday? Monday. As of Monday morning, as everybody else was waiting for Dan Hurley to make his announcement or make his decision, the Lakers were also waiting for that decision, which when I was told that, didn't feel like good news. I'm going to be honest. Again, I didn't have enough to report on it. I didn't want to overextend myself. I just didn't have the information to be able to run with it. But the momentum was certainly moving in a direction where it looked like Hurley was going to stay. And that winds up being the outcome of all of this. And we have to talk about Rob Pelinka. We have to talk about Jeannie Buss. We have to talk about the Lakers kind of aura and where it kind of stands right now. That sheen that sheen feels kind of painted on right now, right? I've called the Lakers gold plated in the past, and I think a lot of those points still remain prescient. Like I know Lakers fans think I hate the Lakers. I really don't. I legitimately don't. I have been pulling for Jeannie Buss. I have been pulling for Rob Pelinka because it means that my favorite basketball team would have good things happening for them. But that's just not how it's played out. And I just like when I can only offer up the information that I have in front of me. And right now, the information that I have in front of me, and just for like the most, for the majority of my time reporting on these Lakers, like the information just hasn't been good. And today was kind of the end result of just things are not where they need to be with the Lakers. But, before we get to more of that stuff, You know, it was, I want to play the clip of Adrian Wojnarowski, at least a little bit of it, his summary of how things played out between Dan Hurley and the Lakers this morning. This is via ESPN.
Coach, what can you tell us about how this all came to be?
Shay, Dan Hurley just informed his players, his administration, that he's turned down the Lakers job. He's going to remain at UConn, chase a third straight national championship. I'm told he was offered a six-year deal worth $70 million. That would have put him among the top six highest paid coaches in the NBA. The Lakers were relentless in their pursuit of Hurley, but ultimately, his opportunity to make history at UConn, to win a third straight title, to do that for the first time potentially since the John Wooden UCLA teams, was too much to walk away from at UConn. Obviously, back.
So the offer, I want to start with the offer. John Fanta, I'm guessing he pronounces it Fanta. He doesn't look like somebody who pronounces it Fanta. John Fanta of Fox Sports reported that Dan Hurley, that the Lakers, I think his report was that the Lakers had an offer for Dan Hurley upwards of $100 million. I saw that report, reached out to my Lakers people and asked them, I said, like, that's a really high number. How confident are you that the Lakers are actually going to make that kind of an offer? Because that felt like Dan Hurley was, in his camp, was leaking that information as like an expectation to the Lakers. This is what it's going to take to get me out of UConn. It's going to take a nine-figure offer. It's going to take almost a decade's worth of years on that contract. It's going to have to take a godfather offer to get me away from UConn. And as Woj says, the opportunity to three-peat, again, like we keep on hearing that Dan Hurley's wife wants to remain and has always wanted to remain on the East Coast. Same with Dan Hurley's father. And you hear all of those factors, and you knew that if the Lakers really wanted to go and get Hurley and get their guy, it was going to have to take a gigantic number. And that's how Woj has framed it this entire time, is that the Lakers were getting ready to prepare that kind of godfather offer. And don't get me wrong, like, you know, paying a coach $11 million, the Lakers haven't done that since Phil Jackson. Like, that's that is still significantly higher than they have paid, basically more than double what they have paid to either of their previous couple head coaches. So like the Lakers think that was a compelling and a competitive offer. It's just that, like, given the situation, if you really, really, really want to get this guy away from UConn and all of the things that he has going for him there at UConn, you have to pay him like more than Monty Williams. Monty Williams makes about $13 million per. This would have paid Hurley a little bit over $11 million per. And again, like, I think Hurley wanted to get to that like 8-ish year mark that would have paid him at 9-figure mark. And that's what it would have taken to get him out of there. And that's why I was kind of surprised when I saw Woj's report on that offer, because I had been told that, like, yeah, the Lakers were prepared to go that high. Not that they definitely were. I had never gotten my hands on, until this morning, on the actual offer that was made. Dan Wojcicki also confirmed that was the offer. I had been told, and now, like, I had also been told as recently as like last night that the Lakers were, going to sit, if it doesn't get to 8 years on the contract that gets you to $100 million total on the deal, that the Lakers would be in that 5 or 6 year range, but still in that 12, maybe $13 million range per year. This came in below that. And it really kind of surprised me. I'm not kidding. Like I as I always say, I will offer you up whatever information that I have, so long as I have it confidently. I didn't have the specifics on the offer that they definitely made. I had just been told that they were confident that they could make that kind of a Godfather offer. Turns out they didn't. And I know lowball is a weighted term, because it's hard to say that they lowballed a coach who would have been a rookie head coach in the NBA, and, you know, making him a top five or six highest paid coach in the league. It's kind of hard to call that in a vacuum lowballing him as an offer. But given the situation, I also don't necessarily know what other term to use for it. You knew that you had, like, you were up against it. You had to convince the guy to leave his current situation. And you always wind up having, like, anytime you're asking somebody to leave somewhere that they have, like, real roots in, you have to pay to uproot that person. It's going to have to take a bigger offer to get that person away from there than that person feels that they could get from their current situation. And I don't think that the Lakers went as far as I think they could have and certainly should have, right? They didn't get the guy in making that offer. And I was pretty honestly, like, disappointed by the offer that the Lakers made. And now, you know, let's talk about their current situation where, you know, the graphic here says, are the Lakers screwed? Hard to feel like they aren't. So the Lakers right now are trying to kind of rebound and regroup. They were hit hard by this decision, I'm told. Again, they thought that they had a real chance. They thought, you know, they had confidence in their ability to potentially get Hurley away from UConn. It actually strikes me very similar to the vibes around the organization after Kawhi Leonard spurned them and went to the Clippers. But the Lakers right now, like, I know a lot of people, the natural instinct is, well, they seem to like JJ as recently as like a week or so ago. Can you just pick up the conversation from there? I'm told it's not that simple, that essentially Redick has, I guess the term that was used today, in conversations that I've had, he's kind of cooled on the Lakers during this whole process. And I'm told that the Lakers also have kind of cooled on Redick during this process. I think there was some frustration there with the Lakers having to wait until after the finals for Redick. Based on some of the conversations I've had, the Lakers felt like you could at least come to some kind of an agreement. You could still focus on the finals, but we would like to have this done so we can move forward with other business. That not being really an option kind of tweaked the Lakers a little bit. And then from Redick's perspective, he thought he was in the driver's seat on this thing, only to find out that the Lakers were going out and pursuing Hurley really hard. I don't know if I would go so far as to say that he feels lied to, you know, because of the situation and how it's played out to this point. But now, you know, he does have an ego to him and he does have negotiating power here. He has the leverage. They need him, I think, more than he needs them. He could just return back to the finals, to calling the finals and being seen as one of the kind of foremost voices in the basketball media industry. He makes upwards of, you know, millions of bucks from ESPN. He probably brings in more millions of dollars from his podcast and the YouTube page that they have there as well. So he's fine without the Lakers. And he'll also eventually get another offer from somebody else. So he needs the Lakers a lot less than the Lakers seem to need him. That isn't to say that he's going to go and say, like, well, the offer that you just made to Hurley, I'm expecting that. He could try. I don't think the Lakers would match it. And look, like, these things are always changing. They're always evolving. As I'm told right now, it doesn't seem like Redick is really an option, but that could obviously very quickly change depending on how the Lakers reapproach, you know, picking up those conversations with him. So if it isn't JJ, then like you're gonna make Borrego Frank Vogel all over again. I do know that like Anthony Davis has vouched for Borrego. It isn't super duper strong. It's not like he's like adamant it has to be Borrego or else I'm gonna be pissed. It hasn't gone that far, but he is you know, voiced his preference there, and I think Borrego has his support. Beyond that, though, it's like you pick up conversations with Sam Cassell again. Do you bring Kenny Atkinson back for another interview? Do you resume talks with, say, David Adelman or Mike Anori, who to this point haven't been taken particularly seriously? All of these candidates, by the way, are looking at the Lakers like, what are you guys doing? And that to me feels like one of the bigger takeaways here is the rest of the league is kind of looking at the Lakers like, what the fuck is going on over there? Like I've been told today, I have it written for Lakers Daily. I was talking to a source today who says that the Lakers job just isn't a very good job. And I know that like I've always said that, you know, there are Lakers sources and there are league sources, and there is a very divergent stance on you know, in both of those groups of people and those voices or whatever. But it's hard not to like agree, at least to a certain extent, about the Lakers job. The Lakers lowballed Ty Lue. Dan Hurley, you know, today didn't take that offer. I think the Lakers, again, like, I don't know if I would use lowball as the term, but it's lowball adjacent what the offer that they made to Dan Hurley. We saw how they treated Frank Vogel, where he, like, coming off of a win against the Utah Jazz, it was reported that if he didn't win that game, he would have been fired the next day. And then that season ends, and 5 minutes after it ends, he gets fired. He has to answer questions about his firing in his own postseason presser. That was insane. You had Darvin Ham go to the Western Conference Finals, win more games in the following year than he won the prior year, and get fired nonetheless. And once again, just like with Frank Vogel, that season ended, and it wasn't like it was some mystery what was going to happen to Darvin Ham. Everybody knew Darvin was going to get fired. And everybody basically that you talk to about the Lakers job feels like you take that job and maybe it works out for like a year or two, but you're only one down stretch or one unfortunate run from being scapegoated so that Rob can keep his job. The other part of this too is that the Lakers don't provide like standard resources to the coaches that they actually do hire. There are rumors out there. There are conversations out there that the Lakers don't like paying assistant coaches a whole bunch. They still haven't had a shooting coach in forever. Their analytics department is below league average. Their video department, like there was a video that Access Sportsnet put of the guys, you know, cutting film, and they're all basically operating in a broom cupboard. And that's on the Lakers' own feed, their own corporate partner's feed. So like, no coach out there or the coaches that you talk to out there about the job, you know, and potentially taking it with the Lakers, their reputation, the Lakers' reputation is in the dirt, you know. And then on top of it, you have a skeleton crew in the front office where it's the thinnest front office in the NBA. It's just Rob Pelinka. There's no GM. He's both president of basketball operations and GM. That doesn't happen very often. And it's not like the Lakers have enjoyed such overwhelming success that should definitely remain the case forever, but that appears to be the case. And the other part of this too, is that like coaches know if Rob Pelinka puts together a bad roster, Jeannie Buss is going to hold the coach accountable for not making that bad roster work. Rob is never going to face any accountability from Jeannie Buss. And that's another thing that coaches are concerned about in, you know, when they talk to you about, you know, potentially, you know, taking that job or whatever, or why that reputation is in the dirt. Those are all concerns that coaches have about the Lakers. And like, I've said this a lot on the show, but like, to me, there are two versions of Lakers exceptionalism. There's a productive one and there's a counterproductive one. The productive version of Lakers exceptionalism is that everybody who works for the Lakers, plays for the Lakers, cuts film for the Lakers, serves popcorn for the Lakers, is expected to be exceptional because they are doing this for the Lakers. That the Lakers hold everybody to an exceptional standard and are exceptional because of everybody living up to that standard. The counterproductive version of Lakers exceptionalism is thinking that everybody who works for the Lakers is inherently exceptional because they work for the Lakers. And you don't necessarily have to earn that exceptionalism. And that is essentially the crux of the conversations that I've had over the course of today, that the Lakers see it as some grand honor getting to coach the Lakers, getting to work for the Lakers, all of those things, when in reality, it's just another job. It's another job that has less security than your average NBA job. And until the Lakers actually get back to holding people to the standard of exceptional, you're going to keep on seeing the tires spin in the mud. And like, yeah, occasionally, because it is the Lakers, because the Lakers have been exceptional in the past, and because of the things that those achievements, you know, like the Lakers have the biggest fan base in the world, like, period. My you know, every stop that I've been at where I've hosted a Lakers show, that show is always the biggest show in that network because Lakers fans show out for their team, period. I'd like to say it's because I'm some kind of special. It's not. I'm not going to pat myself on the back to that extent either. Like, I know that Lakers fans get behind the people who they feel like earn their respect. And I don't think that, like, in recent years, under Jeannie Buss's stewardship, Rob Pelinka, Linda Rambis, Kurt Rambis, like that whole group of people have done what it's taken to earn that respect from Lakers fans. And they need to get back to holding themselves to that exceptional standard. It's like, the other thing too is that standard is just the status quo. That's the MO for everybody else now. Like, everybody else, what it takes to be competitive in the NBA now is significantly higher than it was back when the Lakers were holding themselves to exceptional standards. Everybody else has caught up to that standard or passed, frankly, that standard in terms of what organizations are doing or are willing to do to gain whatever advantage that they could possibly gain. And the Lakers just keep on operating like the mom and pop shop, you know, until again, those things change. Like, you know, the question is there on the right side of your screen. Are the Lakers screwed? They are. So long as they continue approaching these things, feeling as if they are inherently exceptional because they are Lakers. Yeah, I do think they're screwed. I wish I felt a different way, but what else? What's the other take here? I see a lot of people have a lot of comments here. So one, I really appreciate that. Please do, by the way, but please do hit that subscribe button. I promise my voice at some point is going to get better. I just ordered steroids to fix this lung situation in here as I recover from whatever it is my children keep on giving me. But please do hit that subscribe button. Please do share the show. Please do tell your friends that you love it. Tell your enemies that you hate it. All of those good things. But yeah, let's talk about, I already went over what happened. Let's talk about now what, where do they go from here? And I'm told that this is almost a full reset, that the Lakers are basically going to bring people back for more interviews. The candidate list is going to get longer. I saw Mark Stein talking about Jay Wright. I honestly, here's the thing. There are very few things I wouldn't believe about where things stand with the Lakers, where they go from here. A lot of people are going to throw out a lot of names because, like, for everybody, like, so long as the Lakers' job is open, a lot of people can improve their current situations just by way of having that Lakers gig open. So you're going to have that going on. And then, like, from a reporting standpoint, you're going to keep throwing stuff out there, and you're going to, like, every time you hear a name, you may as well throw it out there, because as evidenced by Dan Hurley himself, you never know when some mystery candidate is just going to, like, shoot right through the ranks and get a real opportunity. So, in terms of, like, paying attention to this and tracking all of those names and stuff like that, I'm going to do as decent a job as I can to keep you guys posted on all of those things. But as it stands right now, like this is borderline chaos. Like the Lakers, I don't know how seriously Dan Hurley took the Lakers, but I do think that the Lakers took Dan Hurley extremely seriously and had real confidence that they could maybe get the guy, and now are really forced to scramble and go out and hire somebody who makes people forget about all of this nonsense, which might be impossible, by the way. Like, this is pretty damn hard to not remember. It's insane that Rob Pelinka basically, like, that Ty Lue saga where Ty Lue gets the Lakers cake. Everybody thinks he's going to be the Lakers head coach. The Lakers lowball him, try to force Jason Kidd on him. He says, nah, I'm good. Leaves to go coach the Clippers. You wind up hiring not your plan B, not your plan C even, but your plan D in Frank Vogel. And then you almost hold it against him that, like, he won a championship for you and made it so you couldn't hire Jason Kidd. And now, like, you haven't learned anything. And this fiasco is somehow more embarrassing than the Ty Lue thing. It's insane. And Rob has both of those things now on his resume. Doesn't matter. I haven't heard anything about his seat getting any warmer. Just doesn't matter. Which is just insane. It's just insane. And frankly, very exemplary of what ails the Lakers right now, that you can have two examples of just outright ineptitude. Doesn't matter. He's good. We trust him. Mama mentality. It's crazy. It's insane to me. But now what? Like, now what? The question that I'm sure you all have. It's basically a full refresh, a full reset, and we'll see where the Lakers go in terms of, like, the candidate list and all of that. Like, honestly, it seems like they took today to kind of lick their wounds and get back to the drawing board and find a new list of names and all of that. And I would imagine it's going to be very active in the coming days, because they need this. They want this shit. The Lakers wanted this done last weekend. Like, part of the reason I said it on the show the other day, the reason I didn't think Dan Hurley was coming to the Lakers was because the Lakers, I was told, wanted it done by Sunday. And when Dan Hurley went back to the East Coast and there was no agreement by the end of the weekend, that indicated to me, I don't think this is going to go the way that the Lakers want it to go. And here we are. So I have legitimately been, like, shaking my head all day. Part of it is that, like, I've been talking with people all day on the phone and in text and stuff like that. So that leads to shaking your head. But even when I'm not having conversations with people, I have found myself, took the family to dinner tonight, and I was, like, sitting there eating my salad or whatever, and I'm just like, unbelievable. And Jen's like, what? I'm like, the Lakers. Unbelievable. And she's like, you have a sickness. And I said, actually, yes, I do. I can't stop coughing. But also, yeah, the Lakers are a sickness.